Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize. I'm a pediatric speech-language pathologist, and I work with babies, toddlers, and young preschoolers who are having difficulty learning to communicate. I've been a speech pathologist for the last 15 years and in private practice for the last 10 years or so. And in January of this year, I did something really exciting by launching TeachMeToTalk.com, which is a website for parents. The success of that site has prompted us to develop this show, and this is our second week, so yay, two times in a row. I want to introduce you to my co-host, who is my good friend and colleague, Kate Hensler. Kate, are you there?
Hello, Laura. You're a tough act to follow. You're so professional. I'm always striving to be half as good as Miss Laura. This is Kate. I'm going to give my little spiel, which isn't as impressive. I am called a developmental interventionist, which means, I'm going to have to write something out for this, Laura. That means that I work with 0 to 3-year-old kids with developmental delays for our state, which happens to be Kentucky, our early intervention program called First Steps.
Yeah.
My particular specific background is a degree in psychology. I have a BSN as well in nursing and a master's in interdisciplinary early childhood education. That's it for me, Laura.
That's good.
That's it. No more degrees for me.
I think you have enough already.
I think that'll do it. I'm going to leave that to my children.
Well, good. All right. My intent for this show today is we're going to talk a little bit about what we started talking about last week, things that work and don't work when we're working with children, especially 1, 2, and 3-year-olds who are having difficulty learning to communicate. And we have gotten some emails and comments on the site this week based on our show last week that I want to talk about. But first, before we get to that, if you are listening to us right now on Friday, August 8th, at 2 o'clock Eastern Time, we are live, and we would love for you to call in and ask us any questions that you have about your own child, or if you're a professional and want to share with us any comment or any question, too, we'd love to hear from that as well. Our call-in number is 718-766-4332, and we already have someone holding to talk to us, so let's go ahead and take that call. Hi, caller. Are you there? Hello? Area code 973, are you there? Oh, they hung up.
Oh,
that makes me sad. Okay, if anybody
That's okay.
else...
okay, we still have an opportunity for our first caller. I'm ready for it.
Me too. All right, let me give the number again, and then we'll move on and talk about our other stuff today. It's 718-766-4332. It is a toll-free call, so if anybody wants to call us and you're listening right now live, we would love to hear from you. All right, but let's get back to this other comment. Kate, this is the thing that we talked about before.
Right.
Let me find it. Okay, here it is. This is from a mom named Becky, and she says, it was so great to hear you talk online, because it was the exact answer I was looking for. I just started my 37-month-old daughter at private therapy for the summer, and it was going okay for the first couple of weeks. And lately, she cries as soon as she sees the building or the therapist. She goes for speech, physical, and occupational therapy. She might have apraxia, but no one will give us a definite diagnosis, but definitely motor planning issues. She doesn't like going to the speech therapist or the physical therapist, but seeing the OT is fine. After hearing you say that they should find a way to reach my daughter so she's having fun and getting something out of therapy, I realize I really do need to find a different place for her. Thanks for showing me that I knew it just wasn't right. She shouldn't be throwing things and not engaging with them. Well, I totally agree with that. She shouldn't be doing that. My reply to her was, well, Kate, why don't you weigh in on that first? What do you think the difference was between the OT, the PT, and the speech person?
Of course, we can't tell exactly because we don't know the specific instance, but as a general rule, I would assume that the OT is on some level making some kind of social or emotional connection with the child and really kind of meeting her halfway, making it playful, making it fun, keeping the child happy, letting her have some of the direction and yet sharing some herself. Whatever it is specifically, she's been able to convince that child that it's fun and want her, you know, and has encouraged her to want to participate as opposed to what's going on with the PT and the speech therapist, because obviously this child's cognizant enough to know that some of it is fun to her and some of it isn't. So
right. What do you think about this? This is what, when I was thinking about this earlier, I wonder if on some level, besides that the therapist is probably just naturally more kid-friendly, makes it more fun, I wonder if that sensory piece that she gets from OT might be a little easier for her to do developmentally. What do you think about that?
Assuming they are doing sensory, you know, we don't know specifically.
Right, we don't know. You're exactly right.
That could be it, and that could be part of, you know, that's what the child naturally likes, and obviously she must need it on some level because she's enjoying it and can and will participate willingly and
right.
happily. So could be that, could be that she's just really making somehow a better effort or connecting with the child. You know, it's very hard to tell. It really, because
right.
we don't know, but we know she's
yeah.
doing something right.
Well, and we don't know the details. And for her to get PTOT in speech, we know that it's more going on than just a little late talking. There are probably some other issues,
mm-hmm.
and we don't have a diagnosis. The mom didn't give us that kind of information.
Right.
But if you were the therapist on that team and you heard that she was doing great in OT and you didn't feel like it was going so great for you, tell me kind of your thought processes, what you would do differently. Or what that would make you do?
Well, first thing I do is talk to the occupational therapist, because in this case that's who's having the most success, and try and determine what is she doing that
right.
this child seems to take to. And
now, did you say you would do that first? Because I know you wouldn't do that first.
First,
you would be mad.
First time you'd be mad.
You would say, oh, my gosh,
what am I doing wrong? I've got to fix this. I have to be number one. And of course, unless I'm on your team and then I take number two. But other than that, I have to be number one. You're right. First, I'd ruminate a little bit and really be frustrated. And then I would, you know, take a good look in the mirror and say, for whatever reason, this other therapist has a better connection or is doing
right.
something better than I'm doing. And I think that no matter what discipline you are or what child it is, some kids do automatically take to one person, and who knows, but we just have to do everything we can to try and determine what it is and what we're not doing or what we could do to make it better for that child. Because if a child's throwing things at you and crying when she sees your building, something isn't going right.
There is a problem.
Not therapeutic, yeah.
I know. Now, I'm gonna play the devil's advocate and be the kind of therapist that I never am.
Okay.
But if I were the speech person on a team like that and hearing that she did great for OT, I might just say, well, that's just because the OT lets her run around. That's just because the OT isn't having her do anything. She's not making demands and making her talk. And I totally don't buy that at all anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's just an excuse for a therapist not to work very hard and not to think, how can I connect with this kid? What can I do to make this more fun and then more functional? Usually I think when you're having connection problems with a kid, it's because the activity that you're trying to do is too hard. So that if you bump it down a couple of developmental levels, get a toy that's easier. You know, if you were working on languagey things and you were starting at phrases and realizing, okay, uh-oh, I'm not getting anywhere. I do think the best strategy at that point is to bump things down a developmental level or two, make it easier, and then kind of build it back up. Don't you think so?
I agree, and that's something as a therapist I sometimes struggle with, because it can be kind of easy sometimes to rely on a cool toy or something that, you know, we assume or hope that the child will like. And sometimes they may, in fact, like it, but somehow in the process we kind of lose them.
Right.
I mean, that's not necessarily the scenario where the child's miserable, but it may be
right.
the scenario where we didn't get what we really meant to get at the beginning
right.
of the session. We kind of lost them with the toy. But, yes, I agree, and I have to remind myself of that. I think sometimes the simpler the activity, the more likely they are going to engage with you and communicate on some level with you and not be so enthralled with a specific toy, but
I think so too.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I had a little guy earlier this week that we're finishing him up. He's about to move out of state. And so I'm seeing him more than kind of a standard once a week visit. And he, on Monday, just did not have a good session at all. I took things that he liked, but I just wasn't reaching him. And then the second time I saw him in the week, I really took what a lot of moms would think were more baby toys. You know, really simple things that I knew he could do, and he bounced right back because the toy wasn't hard. He knew how to do it. He had totally mastered the kinds of things that we were doing, and then he was able to communicate and play and have a good time, and then I could get that social connection piece back, and that made it a lot easier for him to move forward.
Right. Well, so I'm going to put the question back on you. What would you do if you were the weak link in that scenario? Say you're the... Well, in this case, we could say speech because it sounded like that child did not connect with the speech. What would be your first thing?
I would do the same thing we've been talking about. I would look at kind of where she was developmentally and make sure that I wasn't doing anything too hard for that level. And you and I have been talking about this a lot with the toys that we take in for particular kids, really mm-hmm. kind of looking at where they are and making sure that the toys aren't so much of a challenge, that that's all that they can focus on, that there's no way they can work speech into that because they're too busy working on the toy. So I would back it down a level or two. I would definitely call the OT and say, what are you doing? Tell me what works for her sensory-wise. What kinds of things do I need to do first that are going to get her little body ready for this? Do we need to jump? Do we need to run? Do we need to spin? You know, what are those things that you're doing with her? And I would take that same approach and then figure out how am I going to work language into this? What kinds of speech goals are we going to, and what can I do differently to get where I want to be, but still use the approach that the little girl likes and that
right.
she's going to want to connect with me.
And I find in practice, all too often, therapists really aren't willing. Maybe it's different when there's an agency and you literally work alongside or your office is next to another therapist's office and they're, but you know, in early intervention generally we go to people's homes and so
right.
we may not cross paths with a particular therapist and so that necessitates a call and you have to say, I'm struggling, which isn't always easy to say, but
right.
you know, and make that connection and ask them what are you doing, what do you suggest and what's working for you, what isn't working, just really compare notes. And so often therapists won't really go there. They just,
well,
like you say, they kind of, go ahead.
Well, that's what your cell phone is for. That's
yeah.
not, everybody has one. It's to call after you have a bad session. Get that other person on the phone and say, look, I totally bombed today, but this mom said it went great for you. So what happened? So that's what you want to be sure to do. And I think as parents should really take the lead on that. If you have a therapist that's struggling on your kid's team, but that you know that a certain other person can get them with a certain approach or a certain, even if it is a certain toy, I think it's all, I love it when a parent says to me, you know, when PT came this week, we did this and it went really, really well. Or if they even say, this didn't go well, because it gives me more information and it helps me choose things that are going to be more appropriate and more fun and where I'm more likely to get greater feedback from a kid that I'm seeing.
I would agree with that.
Okay, good. All right. Let's move on for a second. We have on our chat room, I didn't know what to call that, a question. Let me read this to you. It says, my 2.5-year-old son will not speak except with his pacifier in his mouth. We have been weaning him off of it, but is this going to cause long-term speech problems? I say no. You know, he's talking. So
mm-hmm.
I think that the pacifier in his mouth, that's funny, though, that he won't talk except with the passy in his mouth. I would love it if this mom would just bite the bullet and call us back because we need some details on that. 718-766-4332. My children talked with passies in their mouth, but they talked without passies in their mouth, too. So it's kind of, I think we're missing a little critical piece of information there to really be able to talk about this, don't you?
Yes, I do. You know, I know I've heard your opinion, professional opinion on the pacifier, you know, argument or controversy or discussion. There are certainly speech therapists who say, take that passy out of his mouth and get rid of it.
I'm sorry, we're just going to talk over each other like we do every day.
Okay, go ahead.
Do you think, now why are they saying don't do it? Because they think it's going to keep him from talking?
Yes, I think I've heard parents quote numerous speech therapists who say that. It's not
okay.
Good. How's he going to talk if he has a passy in his mouth? He doesn't need that. He's not a baby. You know, whatever. There can be any number of reasons that they, personally, I never say that. I mean,
I don't either.
Mm-mm.
You know, and I have.
Maybe it's the mothers in us who say, oh, don't do that.
I know, because first and foremost, you do want kids to get their needs met. And honestly, sucking is the most calming and most intrinsic and most primitive reflex that babies are born with. And so many children who have speech issues or other developmental delays are so not ready to calm and not ready to regulate. They need a crutch. And that passy, I think, is fine up until, you know, 2.5 to 3. Now, at about 2, I do think parents should start to limit it a little bit, say mostly for nap time, sleeping, or once a kid has had speech, lots of my kids on my caseload need a passy after that so that they can really calm back down and help them regulate. But honestly, some of the kids that I see, Kate, every day, I couldn't live with them if they didn't have a pacifier. They're so out of sorts. They're cranky.
Right.
They need it. They truly need it, and it's the one thing that might help them calm down and pull it together enough so that they can play and sleep and eat and do all the other things they need to do.
Right. And really, if a child's miserable, how much are they really able to take in? So would you rather have a child who can calm down and focus and really observe what's going on, pay attention
yes.
to what's happening, or a child who's,
<Go ahead. laughs>
who's miserable and screaming and crying and having one meltdown after another? Now, really, which child do you think is going to absorb more from their environment? If,
right.
You know, passy or no? As far as I totally agree that at 2 or thereabouts, depending on the child and his specific
what
situation,
his needs are, yeah.
Limit it some. You know, when they're happy, do they need it? No.
Right.
You know, we can all pretty much determine when a child's happy and when they're not, and it's fine to make it a soothing comfort. We're taking a nap. We're quieting down. We're whatever. And most kids take to that pretty well. As far as the call or the chat question, that I can't say in 10 years of practice I've ever had a child who only talked when they had a passy in their mouth. That almost sounds kind of like a social, you know, that the child is uncomfortable somehow emotionally without the passy to me.
Maybe
but
so.
I'm not
maybe
a psychologist.
So.
It's just
well,
that.
We've
not
got
some...
a caller holding, and I wonder
oh.
if this is that mom.
Okay,
so let's
see.
Try to,
maybe
let's
she can
we...
fill in the blanks for us.
Let's see. Caller from the 937 area code, are you there?
Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
Welcome
Hi.
To the
I am...
Talk with Laura and Kate.
Thank you. I am the pacifier mommy.
You're so glad you called back.
You're getting
okay.
a really good speech therapist, not me. I can say that because it's not me. Laura's really good. So tell us what's going on with that passy child.
Okay. We had begun to take him off the pacifier at just about 23 months old.
Right.
The problem was my husband got a transfer, and we had been living, like, communally. Grandma had been in the home and
yeah.
grandma's dog. And then we moved 4 hours away to a different state, a completely very out in the country, very rural compared to urban.
Uh-huh.
And it was just such a complete culture shock for him. And
right.
to be, I mean, he had been in that same house since the day he was born.
Uh-huh.
So
okay.
he became more, he was never one that was really dependent on the pacifier, but when we moved and he was anxious and a little nervous, I noticed that he kind of relied on it more and more.
You know,
so
and
I thought both
the
phase.
I would have totally done the same thing too, because he had a huge life change.
And oh, just, yeah.
Yeah, I totally would have given it back and let him use it a little more often than that too.
So we started taking it back away, but here's what he does. He'll stick it in his mouth, and he's a chatty child. I don't know where he gets that from, but he's a chatty child.
Oh, yeah.
just like his father.
And I wish I could blame his dad.
Yeah, we're all guilty.
So, but he'll take it out, like, if I use mutual distraction with other things, like when he gets up from his nap, I'll take it and I'll set it up on top of the entertainment center, out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
The other night, we went for a drive in the car. He didn't take it with him.
Uh-huh.
And we're sitting in the car, and my husband is very German, and he has a very boisterous voice, even when he's speaking normally.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he made a comment to me, and he said, he goes, well, make sure I get the credit card back. And then from the back seat, I hear, Dad, 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 Dad. And he said, yes, son. And he goes, be nice.
Oh!
So he'll say stuff. I mean, he'll come out and say, like, phrases and things. But when he's within the home, he'll stick that thing in his mouth, and then he talks over it. So we get a bunch of, you know, the normal toddler garble.
Right.
But then it's like, and what I was concerned with is this going to cause a problem with the tongue when I'm trying to teach him different sounds and vowels and developmentally, is this going to cause him to develop like a lazy tongue?
Well, if he keeps it in until he's 6 or 7, yes. But if
you're
there you go. I mean, at 2.5, it is not going to do that right now. And actually, I don't think you're going to do anything for him right now unless he has it in 24/7 for years and years and years to come. We got a comment last week or the week before on the website that talked about a mom whose dentist had really told her that his excessive pacifier use was going to cause really serious dental problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really buy that with kids. You know, and even, well, let me back up and say, I don't think you're going to cause any tongue problems. You may end up with some braces if he uses it for a long time, but then he's going to be just like every other kid in middle school. You know,
well,
I don't think that that's that big of a deal.
What I've tried lately, and you guys please let me know if I'm going way too far for his age,
okay,
is I'll just calmly say, you know what, honey, mommy cannot understand what it is you want with that passy in your mouth.
Yeah.
You got to take that passy out so mommy can understand you.
That's perfect.
And 50-50 it works.
Yeah.
But other
perfect.
Times I'll reach over and pop it out for him, and
right.
he'll just sit there and look at me like, woman, you have done the wrong thing.
But but listen, when he's talking, is it only jargon and other than those occasional words? You're getting what he's saying, right? He's using real words, his language is moving along.
It's rudimentary. But I think he's right along for his age.
Okay,
for him to have popped off and said, now be nice, that was kind of surprising to me because he does have this sentence development to where he'll say things, but then I get worried because there's other things, like when I ask him, are you done with dinner? He'll say, da-da, instead of done.
He's trying to say all done, and that's okay.
That's okay. That's normal for him to kind of do those little short spurts.
Yeah, has he tried to say that is all done for a long time?
He started talking really early. His pediatrician said that he was a very chatty child, which, again, I don't know where he gets it from.
But, okay, he's 2.5, right?
So, almost, yeah.
Yeah. For 2.5, he should really be talking in 3- and 4-word little phrases and sentences a big majority of the day. Now, that's
I'm in trouble.
Oh, you don't think he's doing that?
No, he's not. And I work with him quite a bit. I have two older sons who were born with hearing problems. So, of course, they were developmentally delayed because of that.
Right.
He doesn't have any hearing problems.
Right.
And I noticed when we moved, there was a regression, which I consider to be a normal regression to a new environment. Have I put him back by 6 months or so, or is there something more specific?
You can't look at it. Well, you can't look at it that way because you had to move. So just chunk that out the window. And
don't keep the job,
don't even go there.
We're realists. Got to have the job. Got to move, Got to go to the country.
And don't beat yourself up about that because it's already said and done. Now you just got to focus on what you can do to really help him move forward. How many words do you think he has? I mean, does he have
Right now,
let me clarify that for you just real quick because I make it clear. When she says words, she means not just the ones that are real clear, but things he uses consistently, and you know what he means. You know, it might da-da for all done is, we'll call that a word because it's really a phrase, but he's always saying all done. So
right.
How many can you say, yeah, I know what he means, whether other people would or not?
Well, I was going to say intimately, because we're together all the time, I pretty much understand everything he's saying.
Right.
And I would say right now, as far as monosyllabic words, we're looking at probably 30 to 35.
Yeah, well, he's going to be a little bit behind them when you're looking at that. But I don't want you to freak out about that or think,
okay.
Oh, no, you know, what do I do from here? Our website, and somebody else just typed in a second ago and asked in the chat room what our website name is again. It's teachmetotalk.com, and it is full of articles that talk about ways that you can work on speech and language at home. And so what you want to do with him right now is really focus on building that single word vocabulary,
mm-hmm.
so that he is saying lots and lots of words, imitating lots of the words that you try to say every day, and really get that single word vocabulary built up so that he's going to have enough words to start to do more of those phrases on his own.
Well, yesterday, and this one really threw me for a loop, we're a very comedic family, okay? We're very jokey, laugh all the time. And some of the things that I do are on the edge of inappropriate at times,
mm-hmm.
and I forget that he's listening.
Yeah.
And I was talking to one of my friends yesterday, and this is going to tell my age, but many years ago I used to watch a show called Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah.
And they had a word on there called bunghole, which amounts to a hole you put oil in.
Yeah.
And it's kind of stuck around. Yesterday, he hears me say it. He's sitting in his high chair. He looks at me and he goes, yep, he a bunghole.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, oh, my gosh, you're going to go to grandma's and say that, and I'm going to be out of the will. You know, I am in so much trouble. Even though it's not a bad word, it certainly doesn't sound like a good word.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I didn't even know what that meant. So whatever.
So it was just like, okay, so once they get something in there, how do I get it out outside of never saying it again?
Well,
I learned a lesson this time.
Never say it again, and you just really do have to ignore that. But more importantly than that, you got to go back and teach him. 35 words is not enough for him to have it 2.5.
And I could be wrong at that because of that passy thing. He's always
right.
talking over that pass.
Right.
So it's like I'm not sure because he's – and the other thing I worry about is he has – for his age, as far as I can tell, he has all of his teeth, yet he has a drooling problem. When he doesn't have the pass in, he'll bend his head down and stuff, and he'll still drool.
Mm-hmm.
And that concerns me a little bit because, you know, that's a little old to be having that. It's almost like a lack of jaw muscle control or something.
Well, that's exactly what it is. It's low muscle tone in his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And again, usually drooling in typically developing children is gone by about 24 months. So that's another little bit of a red flag that I would think,
He turned 2 in April of this year.
Yeah. So just a little, you know, drooling should have already cleared up by now. Have you thought about having him evaluated?
We've got to find a new pediatrician. When I say we live out in the country, we live out in the country. Even horses have moved off to higher ground. You know, even they got bored and left. And here we are stuck out here in the middle of nowhere, and trying to find a pediatrician is a very arduous task.
Well, you're going to have to do that anyway, but I
mm-hmm.
will tell you, you don't have to have a pediatrician to have a referral to your state's early intervention program.
Okay.
What you can do for that is just use a search engine like Google or Yahoo or wherever you do your internet searches and just type in your state name plus the
mm-hmm.
word early intervention, and then that information for your state program will pop up. I would go ahead and have him evaluated even if they tell you don't worry. You know, he's fine, he doesn't qualify, you're still going to probably get some good advice in that assessment and give you some ideas that you can work on him with work with him at home.
Thank you very much. That's exactly what I'm going to do.
Thank you for being our first caller. You were lots of fun.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Okay, we have somebody else holding.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Okay, they're gone now.
Oh, we waited too long.
We waited too long.
get better at the holding. Well, that was fun. Our first caller. I wonder if that where she is, if it's so rural. They, you know, I think almost every state, I'm not 100% sure if it's all states have early intervention. I think it
all
varies.
All states, Dave, it's federal law. Yeah, it's federal law. They have to. It does. The eligibility requirements are supposed to be the same federally because it's all based on the birth to three. I can't think of the law. I can't think of those numbers. But every state is required to have that. Now, some states administer that a little differently. We're in Kentucky, so our state's program is called First Steps, and you know, the assessment in every state would be free, but the details from state to state might be a little bit different, but all states are required to have that through federal law. So that's something good for all our listeners to know. If you have any doubts about where your child is developmentally, get them checked out. Use your state system to do that.
Right. And like Laura said, even if the pediatrician doesn't necessarily agree or isn't concerned, you don't really have to have your pediatrician make the referral. So if you're concerned about your child, go ahead and make the call, and you're making the referral yourself. So it doesn't have to be held up by a pediatrician's approval on that, although fine to talk to him or her about it, but you can make the referral for yourself and get that peace of mind.
That's right. Okay. Let's kind of go back to our first comment that we talked about with the whole little girl liked the OT, but she didn't like the PT and speech person.
Okay.
And that, let's talk about from that the things that we've been talking about just between the two of us, the things that don't work. And there's an article on the website at teachmetotalk.com, What Doesn't Work, Unproductive Strategies for Helping Toddlers Learn to Talk. And let's zip through a couple of these and talk about why they're not a great idea and why we don't think these actually work.
Okay.
The first one we've kind of talked about is, number one, the adult interacting with the child is boring.
I think that's true for adults as well as children. And sometimes it can be difficult to find the mix of you've got to be fun and exciting and animated. Sometimes that can go a little too far and you kind of lose the child because you're too darn much fun, but I'd say more often than not, it tends to be boring. I always say my best competition is Blue's Clues and Barney and
Dora
the Explorer and, you know, 100 other little cartoons. But if you think about them, they're very animated. There's lots of action. There's lots of color. There's, you know, it really draws those kids in. And, you know, it's hard to compete with that sometimes, but if you're flat and boring, then they kind of look at you like, whatever, they're not at all interested. So
right.
That one's pretty obvious.
Pretty obvious. Okay, the next one, the adult interacting with the child is too strict. I have written a comment on when I first wrote this article, you had just told me a story about this. Do you remember
that
there's a speech pathologist that you worked with that really said quite proudly to a mom how strict she is during sessions and why she thought that was such a good idea. How'd that work out for her with that kid?
I don't think she saw her for too terribly long. It didn't work out very well. Apparently, she really loved strict. Yeah, we see that a lot. You know, I think you and I are pretty like-minded on this. We kind of feel like, within reason, we're reasonably happy to follow a child's lead and let them have some say in what's going to happen,
right,
what isn't going to happen, and to make arbitrary decisions about you're going to do this puzzle for 5 minutes and you're going to read this book for 8 minutes and no, you can't have another cookie because I said only one. I mean, you know, and when you're mommy, you have to make some of those decisions, but in a 30 to 60 minute therapy session, it is okay to let them push just a little bit and feel like they have some control because, you know, kids with language delays tend to feel like they don't have a lot of control. So
absolutely,
I think if you give them that, you get a lot more in return. So strict isn't really in my vocabulary, unless you talk to my own children. But in therapy, no, strict isn't going to work. So
I know, and it is different for parents than it is for therapists when they come in. But as a parent, if you are playing with your kid, It doesn't always have to be about following the rules and, you know, making sure that it doesn't get messy in the house and all those things, or, you know, that we're, that you're just going to focus so much on the disciplinary stuff that you forget to have fun and that you forget to have a good time and really, really play. And that was my point about that. It's just that you have to kind of meet kids where they are. And if you're really working on language and you want them to interact with you and learn more words, play is the best way to do that. And while you're playing, don't focus on the other stuff. Let some of that stuff go.
Right, and not necessarily teaching them specific things, but sometimes it's the goofy things you don't plan to do that are the most interesting and entertaining for the kids that really get them going, and that's where you see their little twinkly eyes. And so who cares if you put the puzzle on, you know, and threw it across the room as long as somebody wasn't at the other end. If he loves that and he wants to continue to do that, he'll eventually get to putting the puzzle in the piece in the puzzle, you know, for the short term. It really doesn't matter that everything is done the right way.
Right, right. Okay, number three. This is your favorite one, Kate. This is about another therapist you told me about.
Oh, no.
This
I just hope
really
they're
bad.
Not listening. If you think it's you, it's not, okay? What was it? I'm going to have to be more careful what I share with Laura. What do we have?
The adult follows the kid around narrating what the kid or the adult is doing without any sense that the kid knows or cares what you're talking about. That's, you know, so many speech pathologists say that. That's the first recommendation they make, and I guess I've done it too, where you just think, okay, this kid's not talking because the parent, you know, is not talking to them. Usually the kids, of course, with the kids that I see, that's never the case.
Right.
Because I'm so blessed with such a great caseload. But, you know, that's hardly the issue that I see with children, and especially for parents who would have taken the time to read a website or listen to a show like this. It's not that you're not talking to them. That's not the reason, usually, that kids are having a hard time learning language. But some therapists do really use a lot of their session to do that. They
right.
Really kind of follow the kid around. And if the kid's playing ball, they say, ball, throw me the ball, bounce the ball, show me the ball, without any feedback from the kid, without trying to engage the kid, without any kind of interaction going on at all. And I don't think that that's how kids learn to interact and eventually learn to communicate.
I would agree. And in matter of fact, and like you say, with your most of the families you deal with, there's a lot of good language stimulation going on. They're doing lots and lots of talking. And, in fact, the converse can be true, that they're doing almost too much talking.
Right.
And I know on the counterpart to what not to do in therapy, Laura has a great section on what to do in therapy, and she talks about really, really, really bringing your language level down. And that's, you know, what we love to see is a mommy or daddy or caregiver who's talking but using just in the beginning, when a child isn't very verbal or it can be nonverbal, just single words.
Right.
Repeated, repeated, repeated. And slowing down enough to see that the child is paying some attention and looking at them and taking note of what's going on and not just standing behind them and kind of talking with, you know, we've all been ignored. It's kind of obvious to know, to see they're not really paying much attention.
Right, and just to blab on and on and on like that really is non-productive, because a kid does start to tune you out. You just become kind of the background noise then. And so you do want to keep it on their level. What the experts recommend is that you always talk one level above where your kid is. So he's always hearing that next little language level bump up. So if you have a nonverbal kid, you really should just be doing single words for the majority of the time that you're talking to him. If you have a kid that's doing single words, you should do lots of two-word phrases so that a lot of what you say to him is just one step above. Now, of course, if you're really trying to get him to talk to you and say what you wanted, what you've said, and imitate, if that's your focus, then you're going to want to keep it at his level. But for the majority of the day, you really should just be one little step above where he is. And that's hard to do, because then parents think, well, what about his comprehension? He understands so well. You know, you want to consider that too, But at the same time, you got to kind of meet him where it is. And if you make it too hard, he's not going to be successful anyway.
Right. I think that it's more difficult to stay on that simple one-word, two-word area than it is to, you know, we all talk as adults to children, and that's fine. They do need to hear adult language patterns and become familiar and understand that, but it's really harder to do the single words, and that's what I see less of than the actual, you know, we all tend to use long sentences, and
yeah.
They may or may not get it, but that's more difficult.
It is more difficult, and that's especially true if you have a child that's not just struggling with talking or the expressive portion of language, but a kid who has comprehension problems, that's not following directions, that's not seeming to understand a lot of language or a lot of what you say, that's even more important, is to bring it way, way down so that he can start to link words with objects and words with actions. And they can't do that when you're talking in paragraph-long utterances to them all day long.
And I keep pushing you, Laura, to the what should you do instead of the what not, because we like to talk about what the bad therapists do.
I know.
But one of your good points on the what to do is using signs,
yeah,
to pair with words, you know, in order to give them a way to communicate more immediately. But I always think that, I'm sure this is written somewhere, but this is my own personal theory right now, that one of the reasons signs work is because they slow parents down so much.
I think that's a great point.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, they are using way more. They're saying more and eat and mine and go and whatever else. And we have a certain, if you look on the website, Laura recommends words that she generally starts with and, you know, which signs seem to be the most functional and why, you know, the rationale behind that. But we see that when parents, and I always tell parents, now don't become a champion signer. You know,
right.
I don't want you using as many signs as you do words. Really, one of the reasons I think they work, there are a number of reasons, but one of them is parents only know 5 to 10 signs. That's what they're saying to the child, and that's why
right.
those tend to be the first words that those kids are going to pop out, because they've heard more and eat and mine and, you know, those few words so many times that, lo and behold, they're popping them out before we know it. And it's like, yep, because you weren't saying, Johnny, do you want more cookies? These cookies are delicious. Mmm, they're so good. More cookies,
right.
Johnny?
Yeah, you're right in the
cookie,
little faces.
Cookie, cookie, cookie.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They'll pop back cookie if they hear it enough times. So anyway, that's part of the what to do. And we do start with signing many times because they work. So.
It totally works. All right, number 4, let's move this along. The adult, and this is the bad point, I guess I'll say that I'll do bad cop and you do good cop. Okay, here we go. Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's usually the other way.
Yeah, what? Okay, bad cop, what's number 4?
The adult allows the child to get stuck in negative, unproductive routines to the exclusion of more meaningful play and interaction. And by this, I mean that an adult might allow a kid to just have light and sound toys all day long and push, push, push those buttons to the exclusion of trying to play with the adult or do things that would be more interactive and more communicative.
Mm-hmm. And we see this a lot in the field, that some kids are quite happy to sit and push buttons over
right.
and over and over, and parents sometimes mistakenly think that, well, it has colors, numbers, and the alphabet, so they think it's educational.
Right.
And, you know, it's very rare that a child learns any of those things from the bells and whistles toys, I always call them, just by pushing the A or the B or the 1 or the 2. They don't really care. All they want to see is the lights and the colors and hear the music, which isn't inherently bad, but is it educational? No. And does it lead to increased communication skills? No.
No,
really,
and
doesn't.
I think if you've got a kid that can't say shoe and that can't say mama and can't ask for milk, why in the world are you trying to teach them the alphabet anyway?
Right.
Why are those darn numbers so important anyway? I think that the toy industry has done a huge disservice to parents, because so many of those early, quote-unquote, educational toys are all focused on colors, numbers, and letters, and that's not appropriate for a 1- and a 2-year-old.
And so many parents get get overly concerned about that. And as you say, if they don't have basic words and understand basic words, that's so beyond where they are and where they should be if you're talking about a 1 or a 2-year-old. You know, it's really not typical for a 2-year-old to be fixated on colors, numbers, and the alphabet. So we never encourage that focus.
Yeah,
those toys, they just need to. And I've
take the batteries out.
Right. Take the batteries out. Get rid of the batteries. If he doesn't like it anymore, then give it to the Goodwill. Because, and we've, I know I've been in houses where every toy a child likes, every one of them is battery operated, going to have some music and some sparkly, twinkly, woohoo lights. And sometimes you even see them where there may be some function to the toy. You know, you're supposed to put the ball in and then hit it, and but the child's figured out you don't even need to put the ball in, you just push the button. And then they've really lost the focus of what they were supposed to have done in the first place, and they're still just pushing buttons. So you and I really like to say, just put those away. Get rid of them. Yeah.
Well, and another thing that I think parents do, too, is let their kids zone out to too much TV. If a toddler is watching 4 or 5 hours a day, that's way, way, way too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, certainly allowed my children to watch television when they were that age, and I'm not saying don't do it, but for a kid who just wants movie after movie after movie, that's not really helping him learn about his world. Even if he happens to pop out a word or two or scream, map, map, when Dora is, you know, asking what she needs, it's still not as developmentally appropriate as playing with a toy with mom and dad or playing with mom and dad without a toy. And so really we should encourage parents to really analyze the times that they're using TV. And as a mom, you know, I used TV when I needed it, when I needed to take a shower, when I needed to have a Zoom call. Now parents use it in the car, which I probably wouldn't have done. But just, I think TV should just be safer when parents really, really need it and not just a constant diversion all day for a kid.
Right. And I know, Laura, you cite some research on your website, Teach Me to Talk, about some recent research about they think there may actually be some negative effects of too much or any TV viewing under two, I think, is the research. And I don't know how widely that's been studied, but you know, we see it day in and day out. The kid is just glued to the TV. A bomb could go off and they don't flinch. It's just so engaging. And those tend to be kids that can be really hard to get to play with a human being, but they're glued to the TV. Yeah, and I, you know, did the same thing. My kids watched some TV. Really, in hindsight, my oldest one definitely watched too much TV because she tended to be one of those who loved it.
Right, and begged
for it. Very happy when she watched TV.
Yeah.
But hindsight being 20/20, I agree with you. Use it when you absolutely need it. I think it's important. Hey, this master's in early childhood is going to come in yet. To note that, you know, really little kids, 1-year-olds and 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds, and I don't know, really maybe all of us, but certainly up until 10 or 12, really need to experience things. You know, it's not enough to watch Dora on the swing. They need to be on the swing.
Right.
Even if it's not a toy, it can be a big old spoon and a bowl. It can be a sandbox outside. It can be a bottle with some beans put in it to, you know, let them watch them as they spill through it. It can be anything. Kids, a lot of times my kids, really what they liked were the things that I let them get in the cabinets. You know, I always had a couple cabinets down low where I'd let them get whatever was in there. And they've oftentimes spent way more time doing that than they did the toys. They just like to experience, and they need to experience, and sitting in front of a television really isn't giving them any experience that is particularly worthwhile. So there's our pitch on limit the TV, please.
There you go. And that book that I read over Christmas that you're talking about is called Bright from the Start.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of who the author is right off the top of my head, but there's an article about it on the website. If you'll, I think it's in the parenting section, and it's on the title of the article is Parenting Styles to Promote Intellectual Access, and that book is referenced in there, but it's called Bright from the Start. And the research that was so scary to me from that book, aside from the whole No TV Until 2 that came out a few years ago from the American Academy of Pediatrics, is that too much television watching actually predisposes children to learn to scan and shift their attention much more quickly than they should. And this author, who is a neuroscientist, then hypothesizes that may be why we're seeing the huge dramatic rise in ADD in kids in this country. And that's not a big leap. I don't think that was any huge leap for her to make from that research.
Yeah, I mean, I would guess it's a very complex subject. And the flip side is when they're watching TV, they're not doing a lot of other things that young children, like I was saying, really need to be doing. So
right.
Not only what the TV's doing to them, but what they're not getting because they're glued to the TV.
Right, and those real life experiences.
Yeah, so many kids today really don't get much time to just explore and touch things and feel things, smell things, and, you know, they just really don't get to experience that much, you know, whether they're at home or in the daycare. I don't think we get our kids outside as much as, you know, they used to be able to go out and play and have those experiences, and there's a lot to be said for the good old-fashioned getting down and doing it and not watching it. You mentioned the TVs and in the cars. It always kind of makes me sad when I see a mommy or a daddy and a couple kids in a van with the TVs glowing. You know, I think, that used to be one of the good times, is when we were in the car and we could notice things that we saw and talk about this and that, and sing songs or whatever. It was kind of a family time, and so often I see the TVs glowing, and I think, can't even go to Kroger and have the TV off. So
I know. I really would, you know, and again, our kids are so old that we didn't have that luxury, but I don't think I wouldn't have done it anyway.
No.
Because for the majority of the day, I mean, that's where you have them. You can really talk to them and have their undivided attention in the car because they don't have anything else to do.
Right.
So I think that's just a prime opportunity that parents miss. And I, you know, if my parents live in Mississippi and we're in Kentucky, if we were doing that long 7-8 hour drive again if our kids were younger, I probably would have used it on those long trips, but not for carpool, to go pick up an older kid at school, not to run to Kroger, not to do those little 15 or 20-minute errands that we all do. I think you should find a different way to occupy your kid during those times.
Yeah,
okay.
That could be good singing time. That's good.
Yeah.
I like singing at that point. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's zip through a couple more of these.
Okay.
Some of them we've already talked about. We haven't talked about this one yet, though. Adults are more concerned about how a child talks than what he says.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear this all the time. You'll hear a kid, like that mom said before, duh-duh. But that's that kid's word for all done, and that a mom might stop and say, no, it's all done. Open your mouth, say it like me, instead of really celebrating that the kid said all done and said it appropriately at the time when he was really finished with an activity. So, again, that the mom's or dad's being too picky with the articulation or the speech sound part without really, especially at the beginning when you have a new talker. I think one of the most discouraging things that you can do is focus too much on sounds and not really celebrate those new words, regardless of how on or off target they are in matching the sounds.
Right. Yeah, I see that not too often, but I've definitely seen it. And it is, I always just encourage them, be excited, accept it. The best approach is just to model. If they say da-da, and you know they said all done, you say, that's right, all done.
Yeah.
So that you give them a model of what you'd like it to sound like, but never, ever, ever say, no, it's not da-da. And we, you know, it is kind of sad because we're so excited to hear anything. Yeah. We don't want to hear anything that isn't positive. But really, mostly, we just want to encourage them to keep trying because, you know, you can't fix it if they're not doing it consistently. So the best I know for myself, if somebody says, that's great, I'm much more willing to try again the next time. And that's really all we want, is for early talkers to be anxious and willing and eager to try again. So
absolutely. Okay, the last point on this, I think we've hit on everything else, is the adult enrolls a child in a daycare or playgroup or a Mother's Day Out program thinking that exposure to other children will help him learn to talk. This is just one of my huge pet peeves. Kids don't learn to talk from your brother or sister. Kids don't learn to talk from a peer, another peer that's two. They learn to talk from mommy and daddy, or another caring adult being in your face, playing with you, interacting with you, and really modeling words for you to imitate. It is, you're not going to take a kid who's two, who's completely nonverbal, put them in daycare, and fix a language problem in a short amount of time. I just do not see that happen, but I hear that all the time, don't you?
Yes, I do hear parents say, do you think I should put them in daycare or preschool? And that's not to say that there isn't sometimes something very valuable to be gained in a preschool environment or a good, you know, stimulating daycare, but speech, probably not.
I just don't think so. Mm-hmm. Probably
no.
Not. And especially so many of the times that the kids that the parents are talking about are kids that would be totally overwhelmed in that situation anyway.
Right.
They don't have good social skills. They're not interacting very well. They're not engaging very well. They may not understand too much language. And then to put them in a program where you have, especially if it's not a high-quality program, you've got some kiddos that you see in some of your daycares, the good old posh, that, you know, you're putting a kid in a room with 10 or 12 other kids, one stressed out, frazzled worker with a bunch of broken toys laying around and not too much constructive going on and thinking that that's going to help a kid learn how to talk.
And haven't you had, Laura, I know you have because we discussed everything in case
yeah.
you can't tell, but kids who actually with you and at home in a, you know, healthy environment, controlled environment, familiar environment, they can be pretty verbal, and then you see them at playgroup or Mother's Day Out or preschool or whatever, and they're totally quiet.
Right.
And sometimes
right.
the
Too
teacher
much.
Doesn't even know that they have words.
Right.
And that's another, you know, breaks our hearts because we're so thrilled to have, to see the progress they're making at home and with us. And oftentimes they're less verbal in that because they're intimidated or overwhelmed or threatened, you know, in some way just by the environment, and they say nothing. So,
right.
yeah, I've had
yeah.
more of that than – I've never had a child who didn't talk much at home and talked more at school. Have you?
Me either, never. And, you know,
no.
One of my best professional experiences, you know, is when we ran that language-based playgroup
right.
through our state's early intervention program. And that setting – was different because the ratio was one therapist to three kids. You know, I ran that program, so it was totally language-focused the whole time kids were there, and that is the only instance that I've ever seen, that I've ever had a child on my caseload, where I've seen a difference in a group setting versus a home setting. But again, I think it's because it was so language-based, and that's why we were there. Our whole
right.
purpose was to talk. It wasn't to follow the rules. It wasn't to really learn to play with other kids, although we did work on social stuff. But really, it was a language-based program, so that's the only time I've seen it. And I've actually seen so many of my kids, like you've said, really struggle when a parent wants to kind of throw them into a program like that. And again, parents have to work. I'm not knocking daycare. I'm not knocking working parents because I've been one my whole life. But you've just really, really, really got to analyze what your purpose is when you're doing that. And if you're going to put your child in a program like that, it needs to be for a reason other than help them to learn how to talk, because that's probably not going to happen.
Right. And that's something you even hear experts, quote-unquote experts, say, is he needs to be in a play group, a child care facility, something, because that's how he'll learn to talk, and really probably
not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's totally a myth, and that I don't really ever see that happening.
No, not unless he talked before he went. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. Or unless home is so bad that it's really a better environment for him. But again, for a parent who would be reading us on the site or listening to our show, that's probably not the case.
Right.
Okay, we just got 1 minute. I just got the little update in my ear. So to kind of wrap up our show today, what do you want to say, Kate?
I want to say look at the things, because we focus more on the don't do. I guess maybe next week we'll talk about the do-dos. of what works in therapy, but keep it simple, keep it child-directed, and don't get stuck on the rules.
I think so, too. I couldn't agree more.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Hey. Oh, I think my phone is doing some weird stuff. I want to thank the mom that called in today, and next time we'd love to have anybody else who was listening
today.
She was
funny, wasn't she?
She was funny.
She was a good first caller.
It was. But anybody too chicken to call today that you want to take the plunge and call us next week, we'd love to hear from you. And that's all now from Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. Thanks so much. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.